Joseph.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Today's podcast is brought to you by GoToMeeting.com. And you know, if you aren't using a web conferencing tool or the service you use is clunky, use my first choice, GoToMeeting. GoToMeeting is really easy to use. It turns a call in an instant to an online meeting just with one click. It's affordable, as many meetings as you want for just $49 per month. Very secure, and it substantially reduces meeting-related expenses. You can try GoToMeeting for free for 30 days. If you go to simply the address of gotomeeting.com/podcast, you get 30 free days of unlimited service, and you also get the opportunity to check it out. I highly recommend that we use it for our meetings and our online virtual meetings. Simply go to gotomeeting.com/podcast and go get your 30-day free trial. Hey, welcome to the Disciplined Investor Podcast. This is Andrew Horowitz. How are you? It's the end of January. This is episode number 146, and we're on our way to episode number 150. I mentioned to you last time that, if you want to be a part of that call-in show and or at least have your questions read and talked about on the show, I'd really like you to be a part of it. We've gotten several people who have written in, but you know what? Not as many as I would think. I don't know what's going on, but maybe we're a little bit shy. Do me a favor, write this down. It's a number that I want you to call. It's a Skype-in number. You can call it and leave a message on there, and we'll set up a time where we can actually get with you so we can do the call-in. And the number is 954-828-2977. And basically what we're going to do is we're going to, you know, talk to you and, answer any questions that you have about investments, about finances, shorting, going long, options, your portfolio, whatever you want it to be. It's your time. That's our special 150th episode of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Again, just call in 954-828-2977, leave a message, or you can simply just write an email to askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. We got lots to talk about. We have a great guest. Every about, 5 or 6 weeks, we bring back Frank Curzio to talk about what's going on in the markets. We'll get to him in just a moment. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about what's going on in January. Boy, did we have a lot of news and a lot of things happen in the last 2 weeks of January, and the markets did not take much of that news very, very favorably. In fact, we saw dramatic sell-offs not only here in the United States, but all across the world. You know, when you think about, some of the things that are going on, we have the problems in Greece, and that just got really bad last Friday when there was bigger concern that was growing, and the EU came in, and there was an article in the Financial Times, and they said that they were going to look at bailouts and they weren't going to look at bailouts during the middle of the day. The dollar hopped up on a 5.7% print of GDP in the United States, much greater than was anticipated by most. Of course, not for Goldman. They said we were going to come in at 5.8%. About 2 weeks ago, we started hearing whispers that that was what was Goldman was saying. Some of that we have to write up. About 3.5% was the inventory restocking cycle. We're not going to see that as much moving forward. But nonetheless, there wasn't as much government input, and there was a lot more private investment. So that was good in terms of seeing a beneficial number. I would think that's going to be brought down a little bit when we see the revisions to GDP, very similar to what we saw last time, but probably end up somewhere in about the 5.4 number, maybe about 5.3, depending on exactly how the inventories play out. But the bottom line is it was a pretty big number. Now, what happened? Why would the market sell off in such a circumstance? Well, one of the reasons is that there is a real fear out there that besides the fact that there may be rate hikes or at least some kind of tightening going on in the U.S. coming soon, especially with that kind of print, you know, they're going to see also problems that we're going to see running from countries like Europe or the European region because of the problems they have with Iceland and with Latvia, with Portugal, and with Greece. You know, the Portugal and the Greece issue really came to bear, the budget deficits over in Portugal and the massive, massive debt that they have in Greece and their inability to pay it off. Spain's been questioned as possibly an area we need to look into. And all in all, there was this gigantic run after the dollar broke the 140 mark on the euro, and it traded down just dramatically last week. We wrote an article about how to play this and how to play the Rumbini pessimism, because he talked about this not too long ago, was the concern about the European Union and how they're going to stay afloat if, in fact, the European currency, the euro, starts to get frazzled. Because if you have all this interplay between different and really divergent economies, and you have the inability to really regulate it with a currency individually, different than the states and the United States when they have the states and their different economies, because we still have a singular government. We have all these different governments and all these different possible scenarios happening there, different ways of dealing with their budgets, and no unified oversight, except for the EU, of course. But that's still different. It's really just more of a grouping, we'll call it, conglomerate, rather than a single oversight like we have with the federal government with the United States. So now we have is this massive problem with these various areas. Don't even mention what's happening with Iceland and Greece's debt rating was brought down. Now the EU can't bail them out or bring them in, and they have to actually, if they don't fix that, they're going to have to ask them to leave the EU. They can't be part of it with a rating as low as S&P gave them and Fitch gave them, etc. So now we have all that going on. The dollar starts to rise. And then we see a GDP print at 5.7, and now all of a sudden, everybody starts to cover their positions, and all of a sudden, the carry trade starts to implode. Now, what we did was we actually shorted oil through a double inverse, and we shorted the euro. We made about 20%, I think it was, on the oil play. We actually closed that this week on afternoon of Thursday, and we still have the open position of the short euro, which I think in the last 2 weeks we're up about 14% on. Now, we've held it for about, I don't know, about 2 months right now. But these are things you need to be looking at, because what's happening now is the risk trade is, well, it's kind of off for a little while here. And as the dollar keeps on moving higher, some of the emerging markets, which we've been kind of taking a little bit off the table and actually underfunded recently, is going to be a problem. The S&P 500 is breaking down through major support. And we said that if we saw it break down and hold consistently under about 185, we were going to sell off the S&P 500. The Qs were really bad. In the month to date, the S&P 500 down 3.7%, and the NASDAQ was down about 5.5%. The worst sector, the worst performing sector in the S&P was the technology, where it was down about 8.5% for the month. Came next was the materials with about 8.7, and absolutely in last place was the telecommunications area. Aside from, I guess, if you want to kind of really look at the industry sectors, it was clearly the construction materials, which was down 16% for the month, and the telecom services. You know, the whole problem with the telecom services was that we saw the, we saw Verizon cut their rates and all sorts of problems in that area, and that really was a big problem. But I want to talk to you about two things. I want to get to our guest, Frank, but I want to talk to you about Apple for a minute, what's going on there, and the market outlook. So I guess, what do we take first? Boy, we could really, really talk about two different things here in length, but let's kind of keep it short. Apple, what happened? The iPad came out. The earnings came out. Apple jumped very nicely upwards of about, I don't know, 215 or so, and then just came down dramatically. The iPad, by all accounts, is a bit of a disappointment from, at least when you look at from the bloggers. I'm not commenting from my side. It looks pretty cool, actually, and I thought it was really a neat device. But when it comes from the bloggers and the people that really look at devices, what was, I guess, the most startling was that it still is not the perfect device that they were looking for. They were hoping that Apple would really come out to the fore of something more than just, I don't know, a gigantic iTouch or gigantic iPhone. It has 3G capability with a contract, it seems, has Wi-Fi, of course, but it has no ability to plug in the peripherals. That was an issue. It had a few other, we'll call it flaws. You know, back probably to the battery issue, 10 hours was okay, but that was the best positioning possible with keeping it this lowest. So you usually cut down battery time by about half when you look at these devices. And there was a variety of other things that, I mean, you just could really pick it apart to death. And even from the people who were testing it, there were some problems with it. I am not necessarily finding this to be a problem, but I think that the anticipation that was built up into the Apple earnings and then on top of it for the iPad, I think they should have probably waited a little bit longer before introducing the iPad, maybe a few weeks, because it just, everything, you know, really kind of collided. And I think the disappointment was great when, if you look first when the announcement came out and Steve Jobs was up there talking about it, at first there was a lot of blogging going on that there was no 3G, there was no access to the internet except for Wi-Fi, and that was a really big concern. Apple stock sagged. And then what you found was it turned around when the 3G came out. And then all of a sudden the day after, it really started to sell off down to about 190 or so on Friday. Now, some of that was market related, of course, but some of the market was also Apple related. You have to look at it that way. The sell-off in the technology shares on Friday was really a lot to do with Apple, because there's such a big position in the NASDAQ and in the technology area, of course. But what I really think is important to recognize is the anticipation to some of this, and investors have been seemingly getting very much ahead of themselves, and that's what we're seeing with earnings when it came to Microsoft. We liked the earnings that we saw with Microsoft, and then actually when we looked at them a little bit further, we realized, you know, are they really going to perform this way without Windows 7 showing that kind of dramatic increase, because there was such sales in the beginning of the cycle, rather than seeing how you're going to have a follow through, what's going to be really the next thing they're going to show. So we really decided that before Windows started falling down during the day, which fell about 3.5% or so, that we were going to sell our shares. Microsoft shares fell. We're going to sell our shares. And we have been taking a lot off the table, and I want to share something with you. I'm going to segue in here into the discussion of the market, because the same discussion when it comes to Apple. Right now, domestic markets have a lot of anticipation that was built up, and they thought they were going to see a lot more of a V recovery when it came to earnings. Revenues have been okay. Earnings have been good. But when you compare them to the past, you know, what earnings were, it's still not there. We know that. Still in a recessionary environment. Consumers are still buying a bit. They're not coming out and doing an amazing job. They're not really, you know, finding a whole new pocket of money at this point. We know that. We've seen that in every economic model. We've seen that in every report. We saw that in the GDP number that came out on Friday as well, that, you know, there's still a lackluster spending going on, but good. It's still there, but it's not dramatic. And we know that can't be without the credit, and hopefully we can find ourselves restrained, you know, and building over time, not just throwing it all in all at once. But nonetheless, the anticipation in front of this market, and now the unwinding of the carry trade, and in addition to that, the disappointment with some of the earnings is what's causing these problems. Right now, there are some positions you may want to build on, but you need to be very careful and shorten up your sell stops. Where we had them elongated for a while, we're shortening those up dramatically. We have some shorts on the portfolio. But as the market falls, we're going to increase the shorts, just like you should increase your longs as you find the market moving in the direction up. At the same time, you need to be very careful. There'll be a lot of bounces around here. And I would suggest to you to reevaluate your portfolio positioning right now. Take some of the risk off the table. Watch your material stocks. If we see increases in the value of the dollar, it's going to continue being a problem. If there is a sharp reversal, you're going to see those commodity plays move much higher. But when it comes to the portfolio, your portfolio in general, you need to be careful, because, you know, this may be one of those times that we see a 5, 6, 7% drop from the high, which we did see for the S&P 500 and even further for the NASDAQ, and then all of a sudden a turnaround at any given time. But the question you have to ask yourself right now is, what's going to be that catalyst? Almost everything's on the table, stimulus packages and stimulus packages that may be and that could be are all on the table. What's going to turn these markets to a more positive sentiment after we've broken through all these major support zones? So just think about that. Be very careful. We've seen multiple distributions days. We talked about this over the last number of weeks, about the last 3 weeks, that this is going to happen. At least it looked like it was going to happen. And we took a lot off the table. The Disciplined Investment Managed Growth Strategy was down about 2% for the month of January. One of a kind of a rough month as we see it, although when you look at some of the other areas, not so bad. But nonetheless, you know, the question remains, you know, what's going to happen moving forward, and how do you capitalize on that, either whether it moves up or down? Anyway, we'll talk about that further. On the show notes, I put the S&P sector and industry analysis for you to look at, which shows you each of the sectors, how they've done month-to-date, four-week, quarter-to-date, and all that. You can see the trends, what's happening there. We have a lot more things, and I want to make sure that you look at the site, thedisciplinedinvestor.com, on Monday, because we always have the indicators to watch. And if you watch those, you saw that the markets were getting very soft. And if you would have done like us, you would have taken a lot off the table during that time. And we saved about 50-60%, we figure, of the potential losses we could have had if we didn't do so. Anyway, that's my little scoop for the day. And I don't think we have anything else to mention here before we bring on Frank. Remember that Skype-in number, that number to call if you want to be on episode number 150. And I'm asking you to please do so, is 954-828-2977. Frank Curzio coming right up on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Don't go anywhere. Let's see if we get this thing dialed in here. Hey, Frank, you there?
I'm here.
All right, we're back talking with an old friend. He's not so old. Kind of young guy, actually. Smart guy. One of my very dear friends and my IM buddies throughout each and every day is Frank Curzio, who you know from podcast, the SNA podcast, investment podcast, also with Stansberry. He writes a newsletter there. And this is a guy that you want to listen to because Frank really has his finger on the pulse. Frank, how is it up there in the cold area of Maryland?
I don't know, man. Baltimore, it's different up here. I mean, people are just so laid back and, you know, it's pretty cool, but it's definitely not New York.
I understand. So, you know, my son went recently to New York. He went on his eighth grade field trip. He went to New York and D.C., and he's in New York, and he's got this iPhone, and he's got some kind of a video program that can actually have live video streaming to me.
Uh-huh.
So he what does he do? He streams to me him eating a New York hot dog and down in Chinatown with all the ducks hanging up in the windows.
That's great. Right. That's what New York's all about, man.
Oh, I loved it. Anyway, so let's talk about a lot of things. I got so much to talk to you about because you and I talk, like I said, really. Frank and I talk every single day, multiple times a day.
Yeah.
It's almost like he's like my office wife.
Well, you know what?
Without the arguing.
Just real quick, and if you're into the market, that's what you should do, where you should talk to you know, even IM, because we see the markets differently sometimes, and we'll see different information that we'll provide each other, which, you know, we'll say, did you see this? I'm like, no, I didn't even know, you know, that piece of information was out there. So just, you know, it's good to really keep those IM contacts through today if you're into the market.
Yeah, and so there's so much going on. Let me just kind of read through some of the recent economics. You and I follow these pretty closely, and I got all of the, you know, all the things back to last week sometime. Just kind of looking at over this, we saw that the consumer confidence generally came in a little bit lower, a little bit higher, but still not a great number than we would hope for. We saw that durable goods actually came in severely under. If you look at it with all the transportation, et cetera, came in at 2%. It was supposed to be 2%. It came in as a 0.3%. Ex-transportation, it came in at 0.9%, which came in a little bit higher than it was expected to be. The initial claims that came in last week were much higher than anticipated. The continuing claims actually ticked up also. The existing home sales and anything related to the home were probably some of the most jaw-dropping numbers that I've seen on a month-over-month basis.
60%, absolutely, yeah.
Right?
Housing, unbelievable. Housing was a disaster. It's still in very bad shape. I live in Baltimore. I'm renting a house right now. The house right across from me is abandoned. There's no for sale sign, so it's just an indication of the shadow inventory that we talk about. And there's a lot of people questioning it, like, you know, what is shadow inventory, and, you know, why do we have it? And it's just basically banks do not want to foreclose on the house because they have to take the losses, and they don't want to do that right now because they could hold it and wait for it to, you know, the market to get better, which maybe, who knows? I think it's going to be more than three or five years from now. But you're seeing that shadow inventory creep up into the market because we saw inventory come down the whole time in the housing statistics. It's actually going back up now, the monthly inventories. That was something that really wasn't mentioned in the headlines. So the housing market, it's still pretty bad out there.
Right. And the new home sales were the same thing. Now, why would – I have this – all right, let's say this is a stupid question because why is it that builders won't stop building? Now, obviously, we know the answer to that. It's because they don't make money if they stop building.
Yeah.
But we did see building permits tick up, new house permits tick up. But that's an easy thing to fudge, isn't it?
Well, it is, but it's not necessarily that they're still. But I mean, they have cut back a lot. They obviously have cut back a lot. But you have to realize that there's still certain pockets, especially in the Northeast, that are doing good. So instead of, you know, you have to realize these home builders were building like 20 miles, 30 miles outside of Las Vegas in the middle of the desert with one road going to like 15 houses.
Right.
Where they're not building in those areas anymore because they're abandoned. where they'll go to, you know, some of the New York areas and be able to build, and maybe strong areas in Florida, just maybe tight areas in Florida, or maybe small areas in California, that are actually seeing, a good time to buy in some of these areas. So, you can't really talk about the whole entire country, why they're building anyway. They're building in select spots that are actually starting to pick up just a little bit, but most of the country is still doing terrible.
All right. Now, earnings came in, and earnings have been very hit or miss, very spotty. Let me give you the overview of the S&P 500, and I did this a couple of different ways. We saw approximately, 40% of the S&P 500 report so far. And there's been a mixed bag. We've seen actually positive growth. Now, I'm giving this to you. This is the first statistic I'll give you, which is the S&P X the financials, because we don't like to look at the financials because they're all over the place. The accounting, we'll say the accounting irregularities in their accounting right now with the marked markets or not, or we just pull them out so we don't look at those. And right now we're seeing positive growth of 80 versus 56, so good, a little bit better positive overall growth. Surprise about 2.5% surprise on growth, about 98 companies surprised on the upside and 38 surprised on the downside. Most of the surprises that are coming in are primarily in, which I think you'll be surprised about, are the consumer discretionary area.
Well, I would be careful too. When they always say the surprise factor, and what the surprise means is that they beat the consensus expectation.
Correct.
To be surprised. But when Apple reported, it wasn't a surprise really to the general population or investors out there that they really killed the number, minus their accounting. They changed their accounting, so they really beat the numbers. So when you say a lot of times when they say the surprise on the website, it doesn't mean that the stock actually goes up because they beat estimates, because the stock could have ran up 20% into that report, which we saw with a lot of these stocks. So that's why you've seen really, we look at these things and we say, okay, it says 80% of the stocks beat expectations. How come the market's down so much in the past couple of weeks? It's because expectations were so high.
Well, not only that, more so, let's say it a different way, that because the last two quarters were, it was so extraordinary, the move during earnings season, that nobody wanted to be left behind. There was a week in the beginning of the July earnings season, I believe it was, that the first week of earnings season, things turned around and the markets, general markets, were up 7% for the week. Mm-hmm. Now, what's interesting about that is that you look at that and you say the expectations were low and companies beat. They did the same thing. They beat on the bottom line, but they were lagging on the top line. Remember that? And what happened is that everybody would want to get in front of it. So what we saw was that weeks and weeks before the earnings season, that people were piling into the names. And that's why when Alcoa came out, the first name that came out, of course, for earnings season, it came out, it got a big bump because it looked really good, and then it just fell off a cliff. The same thing happened for Intel after it came out. And this has been an ongoing process. Look at the steel companies. Look at the material companies. Yes, the dollar has been just on fire, by the way. Which is really something we're going to talk about, and you and I went over that Bill Gross piece. I want to talk about that, but right now what we're finding is that the surprise factor is you still have to wonder how off are these analysts? Did the analysts and these companies that are looking at producing the numbers have they gotten to the other side now because they were so far off on the downside, or is it that investors are so far ahead of things? It seems to me that the investors really got ahead of things in the money that was going into this earnings season. But
I have to tell you, right now, I love the market right now, because we used to talk about, the last couple times on the show when Caterpillar was reporting terrible earnings and the CEO went on and said, things are terrible, it's absolutely horrible, and the stocks were going up no matter what. Well, we're finally in a market, which is pretty cool, where, U.S. Steel comes out with a bad report, Weatherford comes out with a bad report, Qualcomm, these stocks get nailed like they're supposed to. And then on the flip side, you have Gilead coming out with a great report, and you have Netflix, which, by the way, was a great, great call by you, and that came out with a great report, and the stock shot up. So it's nice to see stocks being more predictable, where, okay, this is a terrible report, because the last two quarters, we've seen terrible reports, and the stocks are going up anyway, and everyone's like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah, no, this is a very, well, still stocks are doing well, but they have to more so deserve it to do well. And, when we're looking at, look at potash, for example. I have been so negative about potash and the fertilizer companies in general, the Mosaics, the Potash, and a few of the other ones that are out there, but Monsanto a little bit differently. But those two in particular, we see that the negotiations are going on continually behind closed doors that are obviously snuck out and opened, that the delivery of potash has been, the price of it has been going down and down and down because countries are buying it, but they're negotiating much stronger. Everybody knows this, so they keep on coming and underbidding, and they're allowing this. And, you know, we saw a lot of people really bang the desk that potash was a great thing to buy, and you have to get in there, and it drove it up. There was a continuation of merger slash buyout rumors that once that stock hits a low point, there's a buyout rumor that comes in. It hit 124 recently or so, maybe even higher, and it backed off. And these earnings that came out this week were awful on potash.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Awful. And yeah, absolutely. And you know, we're talking about individual companies, and we're talking about expectations. I want to explain what expectations really mean. High expectation stocks are stocks trading at a 52-week high and also have a lot of buy ratings from institutional analysts like J.P. Morgan, Goldman Sachs. Now, you can go to Yahoo Finance for free and just click analyst opinion and then scroll down and you'll see, you know, how many analysts recommend the stock. And when we look at Qualcomm, which reported last week, which really came down hard, 30 out of 35 analysts rated it a buy. As you look at Google, 35 out of 38 analysts, that's 93%. I've never seen that high percentage on any stock in my life that have any, you know, have buy ratings on it. And, you know, 35 out of 38 had a buy rating on Google, and the stock's down almost 100 points from its high. So it's a good contrarian indicator when you see all the analysts come to one side, maybe on a buy and also on a sell, because usually the opposite happens because everybody's in the stock already. So, you know, when you're buying a stock or individual stock, I would take a look at that to see if expectations are high and know going into the quarter that if they miss, you could see a Qualcomm where it's down like 13% in one day.
Yeah, well, let's talk about Qualcomm for a second, because Qualcomm has all the things and all the makings and all of the potential to do really well. But before we do that, just hang on one second. I just want to kind of finish up this discussion on the S&P earnings, because I mentioned it, and we kind of, you and I, that we never do this. We go on a tangent.
Yeah, right.
So the other thing I mentioned is that the growth rate. So we're looking at growth rates, and we saw that for the last three quarters, there was negative growth rates on sales, negative sales, for some time. Now, this is a year-over-year basis on a quarterly basis, okay? So we saw that one of the biggest bangs was going to hopefully be in the materials sector. And right now, the quarterly growth of sales from a year ago is less than 1% still. Supposedly next quarter, that's going to be ramping up. In energy, it's negative. In industrials, it's negative. Consumer discretionary is positive for the first time. But remember, that was lagged a little bit. The consumer discretionary was the first thing to fall off a cliff. Utilities are probably, I'm not exactly sure why this is, but utilities have been the worst overall when it came to earnings and sales expectations. Do you have any thoughts on that? I mean, we're looking at negative 11% surprise factor.
Yeah, and you know what? They've been underperforming, and a lot of people have been jumping on board, and we're seeing it from an earnings perspective. From a stocks perspective, they've actually been doing pretty good because those utility companies are one of the only places in the world right now, maybe I shouldn't go that far, that you could get a yield.
Right.
You know, that you can get a pretty decent industry. Verizon has come down tremendously. It's getting downgrades across the board because, you know, they're lowering prices and, you know, the average revenue per user is coming down, which is hurting margins, and it makes sense. But you know what? That's yielding 6% on a blue-chip company. That's not a bad company. It's a great rate of return. I mean, you know, forget about the last 9 months just for a minute, because we've all made 100% winners, and it's been, you know, very easy. Anyone, you know, my 2-year-old daughter could pick stocks in that environment. Going forward, though, you know, a 6% interest rate on Verizon you're looking at is a good choice. So I would, you know, you're looking at from an earnings perspective, and yes, earnings have hurt, but, you know, you're looking from a stock price perspective, I think these are could be winners. I think you're going to see more money flow into these, and they've actually have done pretty well lately, at least over the past month or two.
The only caveat with utilities is that they have a defined source and a defined base of where they can get their money from, and if energy use is down for an electrical, which I'm not saying that's going to happen. In fact, you might think the other side. You may think that electric utilities actually are a good play if we're looking at more electric cars, electric instrumentation, a more energy efficient and eco-friendly types of energy, which is obviously a big initiative by this administration and the world for that matter. And then if you look at some of the other types of utilities, you know, do phone companies fall into the utility sector? I mean, it's kind of questionable at this point, like they used to in a way. But it's the same thing. They have a certain subscriber base, and it's almost it's commoditized what they do. So when you look at the utilities, the only problem would be that if there is a continuation of a slowdown in the economy, or at least not a pickup in the economy, they can have a problem. And the thing that you need to look at is really how much cash they have on hand, and how much are, you know, how much of a cash flow do they have per share to
that's
look
the,
at.
That's the thing. Cash flow is very big. Right. Yeah, cash flow is very big with these.
Because you want to make sure they can cover their dividend.
Yes, and I don't think you're going to have to worry. And you know what? And that brings up a good point that I want to mention to everyone who's an investor looking at a stock for the first time. Because we look at these companies, there's a high, especially utilities, there's a high barrier of entry. There's nobody like, you know, there's Con Ed, New York, and that's it. So you know, it's not like someone else is going to come and suddenly become a major player in the industry. It doesn't happen. Now, that leads you to the actual stock price. Because some people will look at Con and say, you know what, I don't like what, you know, the stock at all. You know, it's trading kind of high, and, you know, I'm not crazy about it. But you know what? You shouldn't throw it in the garbage and never look at it again. After you're done with your analysis on, say, Con Ed or something, you by the end of your analysis, you say, you know what? I don't like the stock, but if it falls to this price, I would buy it. And I think a lot of people make the mistake when they look at the stock, they're like, I hate that stock. And next thing you know, like, and I'm bringing it up because you had Netflix, which is a great call, and I'm looking at it, and I'm like, you know what? I can't see him adding subscribers. And I was actually a little nervous going to this quarter. You liked it. I wasn't too crazy about it. And you were dead right, and it's up 20%. And you know what? After I looked at it, and the stock is up, and I'm looking at the analysis, I'm like, you know, Blockbuster is closing stores like crazy. So, you know, they're adding all of those subscribers who can't go to Blockbusters anymore. So it makes sense that that model still works, kind of like the Best Buy with Circuit City, where that's still going to kick in when people want to buy stuff. They don't go to Circuit City anymore, so they're going to increase customers. And you know what? A mistake for me for Netflix, not to you know, keep babbling on here, is that there should be a price at every stock that you would buy. Don't just take it and throw it in the garbage and say, all right, I hate this stock, I'm never going to buy it. Like Potash you hate, but you know what? If it's at 70, you would be like, Frank, Potash is a great buy here. So, you know, always be looking at the price, and as for utilities and kind of to my point, you know, make sure that that price, you know, is at a price that you would pay. Yes, you're going to see, tighter earnings going forward in this industry, but if the stock comes down to a level, there is a level that you'd buy it at.
I agree with that. And let me just give you something on Netflix, and then we'll get back to Qualcomm for a minute. But Netflix, one of the things and one of the reasons why they're building subscribers from their downloadable platform, which, by the way, I have and I use, it's awful. And I'll tell you why.
Horrible. I have it too. You have PlayStation, right? Or do you have Xbox?
Well, we have the Xbox, but I did it on, actually, the Samsung has a Blueberry DVD player.
Muffin, yeah.
It has a blue something, blueberry DVD player. You know, okay. the Blu-ray, and it is built in. It has Netflix, Pandora, YouTube, and Netflix and Blockbuster, and it has a UI. You plug it into the internet. It has a UI where it comes up, and you can scroll through and pick one of those. Blockbuster's UI is great. YouTube is kind of cool. It's a little clunky trying to type on those things and look up things. But the Netflix, the problem is that the UI I find to be very clunky, and the second thing is the movies they have are awful.
Absolutely awful. They have no, you know, I was so, you know, I was static when I saw it. I had a PlayStation 3, and I have it hooked up in my man room downstairs where, you know.
Nice, the cave. It's called a cave now.
The cave where, you know, my wife lets me go for a half an hour a day before I have to watch the baby.
Good boy.
So, you know, and I go down, and I was like, okay, let me try this. And they have no movies. Like, no, you can't really stream any of the movies yet. And I was just like, you know, you're really pumping this service a little bit early because, you know, there wasn't one movie that I actually wanted to watch, and none of the movies coming out right now are actually on there. So hopefully, I'm sure it's going to get better, but I don't know why they're advertising that much because I was extremely disappointed in Netflix. But, and you can't really, you know.
No, I agree. I 100% agree. And the other thing is that I have a very big concern of, we actually cut our position in half after the earning, into the morning after the earnings, took a nice big profit on it. But I will tell you something, what concerns me about the Netflix situation is how many people are going to hold that. The big issue and the big rise in the stock seems to me to be, yes, they did beat earnings, no question about that, which I think was a little bit of a low bar on that one, but they had over a million subscribers, of new subscribers. The question is, how many of those new subscribers are going to stick? And, you know, unless we have another device that comes out, and maybe this new Apple iPad, which, by the way, they're being sued by Fujitsu for, because Fujitsu had the name prior, which Apple doesn't seem to care about that. But Apple came out with this new iPad, and are they going to have the same kind of service? Possibly. Is it going to be expanded to other players and devices? Possibly. The thing is that I really don't want to keep my Netflix subscription if I can't get a decent downloadable movie. It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it does. And that's something that would worry me in the future. Also, Yeah, you have to worry about piracy as well. I mean, I think we all know people who get, you know, a ton of these movies for free, you know, at different services. And they actually have, you know, I talked to one of my friends on this who, you know, has another friend that actually downloads those movies and everything. I'm like, how do you do that? Don't you get caught? And he said there's like a certain way to do it now where technology is so advanced that where they only download like different streams of the movie and then they combine it. It's like a lot of tech guys are probably listening to this and they're probably saying, Frank, you don't know what you're talking about.
Frank, it's called the BitTorrent.
It's unbelievable. Where
not, you know, that I know either. A friend told me.
You can't really trace it. And you know, I'm like, wow. So that's also going to become a major factor because they're not downloading the movies that are out in Blockbuster and Netflix. They're downloading the movies that are out in the movies right now. So, you know, that's a big advantage. And plus, they're actually able to do it in like high definition now and stuff. So that's something that could also be a risk.
Yep. I agree. No, I totally agree. So let's get back to Qualcomm.
Sure.
Qualcomm is a company that should be doing well in this environment because everybody and their brother, sister, cousin, aunt, uncle is buying a cell phone of some sort. Mm-hmm. And that's one of their big plays, right? You know, and so what's the problem?
I think the problem is the expectations are very, very high. We're talking about Qualcomm. Qualcomm is an enormous company. I think that management kind of said last quarter, you know, that he lowered his guidance, and for some reason, every single analyst said the same thing, that, oh, that's conservative. Well, it wasn't conservative. The guy was actually telling the truth. So everybody's, like, really upset at management, but you really can't be upset at management. They were being up front. From what I know, they're doing well in China. They're doing good. But, again, it's just such a big company. Everybody loves this company so much that, I just think that, it was due to come down a little bit, but it looks like it's getting into a buying area where, you know, it got crushed last week for like 13-15%.
Yeah, some of these stocks, you know, you need to cut. This also, in this earnings environment and with the stock market being a little bit roughed up the last few weeks, and it looks like, we are breaking some very important technical indicators, but let's kind of stay away from that for a second because I want to kind of focus on some of these stocks. You have to let them, I think, after it comes down, after this disappointment, you need to, you know, there'll be another day or two after they're going to pop. They may turn down again. You got to be very careful to pick those up on support points and watch your things like stochastics, your MACDs. Watch where the turn is going to occur. There will be a point, but right now people are not rushing in afterwards, right afterwards, to buy it like they were for some time. They're letting to see where the stock kind of plays out to, and then maybe it's a time to pick up if you want to. Just never be too early. That's the big issue there.
Yes, and also look for the news of why the stock is down. And with Qualcomm, you know, people are saying, well, you know, the smartphones are going out of control. That's what we see. But you have to remember Qualcomm, you know, they had a huge inventory adjustment because a lot of their, like, lower-end phones, they're getting rid of. So, I mean, we're looking at the iPhone, we're looking at the Googles, and all these new phones coming out, but yet the small phones aren't selling anymore. So that seems like a problem that's internally with Qualcomm that could easily be fixed. It seems like, you know, they caught them off guard when they had to take that write-down. But, you know, that's something I like to see, either that or maybe they reported a delay in a contract or something happens because the stock gets hit. And delays does not mean that, you know, the revenue is never going to show up. It just means it's delayed. And sometimes the stock gets nailed, but it provides a great opportunity to buy.
Right, I agree. Let's change topics for a second, and let's talk about this piece that was put out. I want to talk about Obama's speech. Oh, I'm going to interrupt my own self here for a second and interrupt my thought process. I have so many emails that came in thanking you and myself, actually, but we'll give it to you, obviously, for talking about Take Two. Right after you talked about Take Two on the last discussion, I mean, I think there was a variety of players out there that disclosed their ownership of it, and Take Two went right through the roof. It's been backing off a bit lately, but yep. You know, we need obviously them to come out with a product. Would be nice, right?
It will be nice. I like it as an 18-month play. I think it's a great play here. The earnings are going to surge. I mean, you look at the Grand Theft Auto franchise when it was released last time, which was 2008. It was the largest entertainment product in history. Now that's Modern Warfare, which we both play, which is a great game.
Wow, that's
good.
But
that new release is going to come out in 2011. Remember, 2008, Electronic Arts offered to buy this company for $26 just based on basically that. And Take-Two has a lot more titles, and you know, they're seeing losses from its Major League Baseball contract. But going forward 18 months, I like it. It doesn't mean it's not going to come down 15% from this level. It's a company that I would stick to my guns as an 18-month play, where I think it will double in 18 months when the new Grand Theft Auto comes out and all the rest of their titles come out. They're going through some more delays. But, yeah, we'll take it up very cheap, but I still think there's a lot of upside in our stock.
Yeah, we sold the position for a nice profit, full disclosure. We may pick it up again. I do think there is an opportunity, not to spread any weird rumors here, but, you know, I mean, this is a cheap company. There's a lot of money sitting on the banks. of like a Microsoft or other companies that may want to pick up a gaming company. Who knows? We'll see what happens with that.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things is you picked that for your newsletter. Now, here's the announcement, folks, that you may not know about, but Frank finally, drum roll here, finally has his newsletter out, and it's finally in publication. You can get it. It's like $300 over at Stansberry and Associates, but listen, put your ears close to your little earbuds there. Stop the car if you're driving, and listen, it's called the Penny Stock Speculator. And this is really, you know, stocks under $10 or so. And this is what his specialty is in terms of writing. And if you wanted it, here it finally is. The good news is that Frank is going to, I twisted his arm, he's going to give you a $99 special. But that's not all. You're going to get a free set of Ginsu knives with this.
Wow, this is great, man.
Isn't this unbelievable? Cool. And that's not it. You're going to get the folding hanger inversion machine. No, seriously, $99 for the Penny Stock Speculator. That's for a year, right, Frank?
Yeah, it's a Penny Stock Specialist. It's $99 for the year, and that rate isn't anywhere on our website, and I worked out a deal with the higher-ups that, you know, for all the clients and all the people that listen to the podcast, my podcast, and podcasts in general, they get it for $99, and they agree to it. So you can't get it on the web. You're going to have to email me at curzio1, C-U-R-Z-I-O, curzio1@gmail.com. It's curzio1@gmail.com to get the $99 rate for the year. And you get all the bonus reports and everything. But, yeah, Andrew, I really appreciate you mentioning that. I've gotten some questions on it, you know, and, you know, I'm not a guy to plug stuff. I just like to talk and stuff like that. But I appreciate you mentioning it.
Oh, he likes to talk almost as much as I do.
Yeah,
almost.
Hey, we have podcasts, right? That's
right,
why.
Right, exactly. All right, let's talk about another grouping of stocks. And then I want to talk to you about, and by the way, sorry for misstating. It's the Penny Stock Specialist.
That's correct. Thank you.
Penny Stock Specialist, not
and
the
it
speculator.
And it's focused on stocks that trade under 10, not under a dollar. So it's under $10.
Right. Let's talk about Obama. He came last week. He had his State of the Union address. And there's a lot of very, I don't know, you know, it looked like he was really pumped up. He was very focused. He was talking about all the things that had to be done. There was some dissension. There was some dissension by, I don't think I've ever seen this before, a president basically shaking a finger and dissing a Supreme Court before. Have you ever seen that?
No, I haven't seen it. But I have to say something that may, you know, people might stop listening to my podcast. But I really enjoyed his speech. I thought it was a great speech.
Yep.
I think that, you know, he addressed the problems. He said, and, you know, I know it's the big thing right now to talk terrible about Obama. I mean, Obama's making Bush look like a saint here. I thought the speech was good. I think that it's true. It just seems like people on both sides are saying no just to say no because it's an election year where, you know, right now is the time, I think, you know, and I don't want to sound like, you know, so political and patriotic here, but, you know, we do have to come together. There's people actually losing jobs. Unemployment rate is 17% for people who really want to find jobs that can't. And, you know, we can't wait for election year. People pointing fingers and saying no so they get elected. We really need, you know, there's ways to strengthen, you know, he's talking about exports and increasing exports. I don't know if we're going to be able to do that, especially with a rising dollar, but, you know, there's solutions there. Maybe it is alternative energy, which I'm not too crazy about, but just ways that we could really, you know, get the job market going, man, because the emails that I get, I really feel bad for some of the people out there.
Yeah, I agree.
They've been looking for 2 years and I can't find anything. And the things that they're going to find are a 50% discount to their salary and they have family. So it's a difficult environment out there. And I think he captured that yesterday. He said, okay, look, you know, enough of this and let's just get some of the things done. So hopefully they do, you know?
Well, but some of the thing it was a little bit of politicizing going on, a little bit of looking for, as I call it, the blood from bankers, where they had a discussion or he had a discussion that there's going to be a $30 billion jobs bill that covered all sorts of different things. Mm-hmm. And it was going to be used from the money was going to be gained from the money that was paid back by the banking industry for TARP. And first of all, he'd have to really put on a show to get the money from TARP. That's not allowed to utilize that. Now, if they're saying, well, we had $30 billion paid back, so we can then spend another $30 billion from somewhere else, and he's kind of, you know, looking at it that way, trying to equate it, okay. But you can't just use that money. That money is meant to bail out banks, unfortunately, meant to bail out banks. And then, of course, the day before that, there was the congressional... I guess it would be witch hunt to find who was guilty, whether it was Geithner or it was Treasury Secretary, former Treasury Secretary Paulson. And each of them said that neither of them were in charge at the time and they had no idea. So I don't know who was in charge at the time and who was making the decisions at the time. But did you see Geithner at when they focused on him during the presidential State of the Union, he looked awful, didn't he?
Yeah, he did look awful.
Oh, he looked beat up. Oh, poor guy. He looked like he hadn't shaved in days. His collars like looked like the stays were taken out and the collars were turning up. It looks like he just had a couple of drinks. You know, his hair was all shaggy and messed up. It's unbelievable. Just a few hours later.
Yeah, it's been a rough road, and even, you know, Bernanke with the reappointment and everything. I don't know why Bernanke wants to get reappointed for. I mean, he can make 10 times his salary as a consultant. PIMCO will hire him in a heartbeat. You know, everybody hates, no matter what he does, even if he fixes the economy, they're going to hate him. I mean, Volcker's the only, you know, ex-Fed chief that people like out of all of them. So
which makes no sense.
Plus, he's probably going to work half the hours that he's working now. So I just don't understand why he wants his job so
bad. This is not a job. And, you know, he has to have some kind of a strange psychological impairment to take that position. I mean,
I know. And you know what? I mean, you know, you could say he's responsible for most of it, but you know what? We've come a long way, and from people waiting on lines, from my friends calling me saying if they should take their money out of the banks, we've come a long way. And I don't know who's responsible, who's not, and we don't know what the consequences are going to be down the line, but you know what? We're in a much better place than we are 9 months ago. Not saying that, you know, of course, when you can just print money recklessly, you know, but right now, hopefully, you know, I don't see us getting out of this. I see longer-term problems, but you know, I'd have to say that you know, the people in charge over there did an okay job to get us to where we are now. It's what we're going to do in the future. It's going to be
it depends on who you look at. I mean, some people write that Bernanke is like an arsonist who put out his own fire.
Exactly. you're 100% right. And there's people out there that hate him. There's people out there that like him. You know, I just look at the facts, and right now we're in a much better place than we were compared to, like, people waiting online to take the money out of the banks and the mm-hmm. whole, you know, commercial market freezing where GE couldn't pay their employees. But, you know, to we are now. But, again, you know, deficits are out of control, and it's a long way from here. So, you know, we'll see what happens going forward.
Let's talk about the Bill Gross. He put out a piece. He writes for PIMCO, or he writes a piece for PIMCO, and he does it monthly. And he's pretty sarcastic in this. He takes some pot shots at some people in there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was making, I think, I don't know, not saying making fun of, but he was commenting on the angry look of James Carville, but that's how it opens. And he talks about this ring of fire, which focuses in on the debt and the amount of deficit. So there's two different things, the deficit as a percentage of GDP and the debt factors of many countries developed and developing. And he created this ring. He made a circle around those that have the highest debt and the highest amount of debt. Deficit to GDP. And clearly the U.S. is within that circle. The ones that aren't are something like Norway, Australia, or Norway being the best, Australia, New Zealand to a point. But if you look at the developed countries, you're seeing a lot of problems. I mean, Japan, the United States, you're seeing Germany. I mean, they're all looking pretty vulnerable at this point. Greece, by the way, is in there. And we're seeing what's happening with Greece and Latvia, what was the other one I was thinking about? There was another one. Greece and Latvia right now in Europe, and that causing all sorts of problems. But the dollar has been gaining, and it is my thinking that for a time that the dollar was going to eventually gain. We have, by the way, shorts against the euro for the last 2 months approximately, and that's paying off right now very handsomely. And we do that through an ETF with the symbol EUO, which is the double inverse euro short. And, you know, it's affecting oil prices, too. But the euro looks like it really could be in a problematic zone. Rubini came out with a commentary last week. I blogged this on thedisciplinedinvestor.com that, you know, he's really seeing there could be some cracks into the European Union and into the ECU in terms of their currency. And I've always said this could be a big problem if economies start to break down. So what's your take on this whole issue of the fragility of the euro and of these European zone?
Well, you know, I read the article, and first I want to say that and it's his monthly piece, Bill Gross. And I like Bill Gross, and I like Mohammed Al-Arian, the guys at PIMCO, because it seems like they're talking to you personally, and they get, like, the bigger picture on Main Street and not just an audience filled with a bunch of millionaires. There's a couple things I want to mention. They have a ring of fire around countries like Greece, Spain, Ireland, and the United States. I think the United States is in a much better place. Also, we're looking at you know, the debt to GDP. And, you know, we're supposed to have a pretty good year. I mean, we have Bill Miller, who, you know, I'm not too crazy about, but he really thinks it could be high as 8% in 2010. And if that's the case, then, you know, it doesn't look like we should be in that ring of fire, but I don't see 8%. I see more like 4.5% next year. But, you know, with that said, I think we have to look at the USA and say, we're saving a lot of money right now, okay? And that is a good thing. And that's going to hurt GDP, and it's going to make our debt-to-GDP ratio look much, much higher, which I understand that we are spending money. I'm just trying to put a little bit of a positive thing on here. But that money eventually, whether it's 3 years or 5 years, is going to be set. It's going to be filtered back into the economy. And I think the fact that we're able to save now and really worry about it is a good thing. We're deleveraging, which he's talking about, which is a good thing. So, you know, I think, 2011, 2012 are going to be terrible. I just disagree that, you know, we're in the same ring of fire as Greece right now. You know what I mean?
Right. But, well, we're not in the same, we're in the same ring, but we're not in the same place.
Exactly. We're not even close. Right. We're not even close. We shouldn't even be in that circle with Greece and Spain. I personally think. I mean, you know, these are countries that are in a ton of trouble getting bailed out right now. So,
How about this? We're in the sauna.
Yeah. I'd go with that.
We're in the sauna, they're in the fire. Okay, gotcha.
You know, so, and we have PIMCO, you know, making a strong, bearish statement. It's important to realize, you know, what they're saying. And it's also important to realize that these are bond guys, not stock guys.
Right, and that's a very important issue. They do have stocks, though.
These guys have been bearish for the last 5 months and missed, like, one of the biggest rallies. And that's okay, because they're not stock guys, they're bond guys. But, you know, they've been calling for a correction, you know, when the S&P was at 800, 850. Even if we decline from 20% here, they're still not right. So, you know, with that said, we also have, like, Rubini, who's extremely bearish. We have the Chinese central bank official extremely worried about the carry trade. Even Jim Cramer is actually bearish right now. So, you know what? I like that because, you know, up to, like, 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, the whole entire world thought that S&P was going up 20%. So I feel a little bit more confident where if you're looking at the equity market, there's few places where you could put your money to get a solid return. I mean, with interest rates at zero and they're supposed to be zero until 2011, sure, we could say some stocks are overvalued. They're getting hit. You know, Qualcomm's now at a 15% discount, you know, than it was last week. So, you know, there are opportunities in the stock market. I wouldn't run for cover. I think you have to be careful. But, you know, the whole ring of fire, it's a great read. I just think that, you know, all this stuff and all the crap's going to hit the fan. I think I would say 2011 and past that, I just think right now where interest rates are, the stock market is a great place for you to put your money. I really believe that.
Yeah, and you just have to be careful what you do. And don't be afraid necessarily about, I don't want to say interim moves, but, you know, sometimes the moves are news-driven. There's rumor-driven. There's a lot of – there hasn't been a lot – even though we call this a liquidity-driven rally – there hasn't been a lot of liquidity out there. Retail investors are still not really playing, and the institutions can really move things around. The day traders can really move markets around very strong. How many times have we seen, not only for technical reasons, but a market that just out of nowhere just pops up? And, you know, you see just this giant move in a half hour, an hour, based on a news item, whether it's a situation in South Korea, China, whatever it may be.
Absolutely.
So you need to look at quality stocks. You need to, in my opinion, you know, we don't have an 18-month time frame when we look at things. We look at things to see, you know, what their 1, 2, 3 month outlook, 6 month outlook is, but that may not be enough time. That doesn't mean we won't hold it for 18 months if it's appropriate. But yeah. What we do is we want to make sure we don't get hurt at the same time. We're not willing to take something down 15, 20, 25% just in the hopes of this or that. You know, we will take it down, let's, as an example, 5%, 8%, 10%. We may think that the stock is basing at that point, add to it, but we're not going to continually add to something just because it moves down.
And guys, this is my opinion. I could be wrong and the market crash, like, you know, in a week. And there's ways I prevent that by using, you know, stop losses will help. Right. You know, I try to, like, right now I'm focusing on stocks that trade under 10 that have insider buying. I think that's a great quality. When your stock's up 100%, insiders are buying at this level. Looking at companies with stronger balance sheets. I also have a list of companies between $11 and $15 that I monitor every day. So when I see, like, a Qualcomm, which is obviously a lot higher than that price, when they come down 15, 20%, there usually is such an overreaction where, you know, think about it. Last week you're saying this market's, you know, totally overvalued looking at Qualcomm, and now it's, you know, 15, 20% lower. You know, there's a lot of opportunities out there, but you have to be careful. And just to let you know, you listen to Andrew and myself on our podcast, it's a minefield out there. I mean, we're guys that look at the market every minute of every day, and, you know, just for an example, U.S. Steel, some analysts upgraded ahead of the quarter. The quarter was absolutely horrible. The stock fell. I mean, I think they put an $80 price target on it. The stock fell. It's now 46, and Goldman's downgrading it. I mean, you're looking at, China GDP at 10%, inflation at 5%. They're scrambling to increase bank reserves and cut inflation. Yet, we're at, 3% growth next year, 3% inflation. We're not even worried about inflation at all. Well, interest rates are low forever. So it's a very confusing market out there. You're getting mixed signals out there, and it's difficult. So, protect yourself on a downside where you could use, stop losses and use, those defensive components, strong balance sheets and maybe insider buying.
Yep, I hear you. So let's finish it off with a discussion about solar, because one of the things that Frank told me, Frank has a lot of, we call it the Curzio wisdom, and or Curzioisms. And, Frank has, he told me once, we were talking about the solars, and I said, what is with these solar companies? It seems like they should be going up, they're going down. Another day I said, it seems like they should be going down, they're going up. And Frank said something to me one day, and he said, Andrew, here's the deal with solar companies. The solar companies have a lot of problems. There's no question about that. They have issues in Germany that, whether they're going to be halting or changing the amount of money that they're going to be using to subsidize on the wafers and the chips and all that. And he said, here's what you need to think about. When everybody hates the solars, when it's looking like, ugh, these things are just finished, they're all going bankrupt, the news is the worst, that's time to buy.
Absolutely. I mean, to your point, people look at Warren Buffett, and Warren Buffett said, he'll never ever invest in an airline. Look, you could have made a ton of money in airline stocks at the right time. So, this goes back to what I was saying before. At the right price, you should look at stocks and sectors at a certain price they're buy. Now, solar, here's the deal with solar. Germany cutting subsidies, Spain cutting subsidies. Now California, that's one of those solar-friendly states, says, it wants to see its debt reduced before they put more cash into, alternative energy and solar, which is probably not going to happen for a very long time. The news does not get worse than it is on solar right now. It's a place where you should be looking because expectations are low. And if Germany says, we're not going to cut subsidies by 25%, we're going to cut subsidies by 15%, you're going to see that ETF jump 5% immediately and some of those stocks jump 10 to 15%. So when I know it's difficult and it goes again, it's anything you ever read, but when things are absolutely at their worst, it's almost the best time to buy. It's been proven time and time again. I know it's a terrible strategy. People hate contrarian. It doesn't sell. They like to be bullish when stocks are going higher and bearish when stocks are going lower. But, it's a good to buy these sectors when everybody hates them. And right now, everybody hates solar.
Oh, they dropped.
The place that I'm looking.
Boy, did you see some of these, like Yingli and a First? And I mean, I just go down the list. It's they're ugly.
They're absolutely ugly. And if you're a chartist, you're probably going to, you want to shoot me on the street right now looking at the charts. I'm just saying, try to do your research. Look at the balance sheet. See how much cash they have on them. See if there's insider buying on these stocks that are coming down. If the insiders are buying, that means they're confident in the company because they only buy for one reason. They sell for a lot of reasons. They buy for one reason. They think the stock's going higher. So I would look, just start looking at that sector. It's a way I've made a ton of money doing this for subscribers, recommending Massey Energy under 10 when, Obama said he's going to bankrupt the whole entire industry and coal was horrible and Massey's 40 now. So, you want to buy these companies and these sectors when everybody hates them. Right now, everybody hates solar.
Yeah, I hear you. We're going to wrap it up and say thank you to Frank Curzio, of course. Let me remind you of a couple of things here that, of course, you can get the Penny Stock Specialist for $99 for a year. That's about $200 off the list price. All you have to do is email curzio1@gmail.com or you can contact me anytime you want and I'll put you in the right direction. Again, for Frank's newsletter that finally came out, it's been incubating, it's been working, it's been something to check out. I would encourage you for the Penny Stock Specialist, curzio1@gmail.com. And of course, I want to remind you that show number 150, we had a little problem with that Skype situation where we asked you to, if you want to call in, let me get that number. Hang on. I always forget the number. Hang on. It's if you want to call in, 954-828-2977. Leave your message. If you want to be on a call-in show for the Disciplined Investor for that special show we're doing, we have several people that have already done so and lined up for show number 150. It's only about 4 or 5 weeks from now. Just call in 954-828-2977. I encourage you, even if you're scared or concerned, do so because a lot of people can probably learn from your question as well. Or just email me at askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Remember to keep your stock straight, your funds focused, and make sure that overall you are doing your research and your planning for every situation that may occur. I want to thank you for listening to the Disciplined Investor Podcast, episode number 146. If you want to find out more about the management of money, how we do it, why we do it, and all about the ins and outs, all you have to do is go to our 14-minute virtual tour that's available on the Disciplined Investor www.thedisciplinedinvestor.com. We'll put all the stocks we talked about today, all the different things that we have mentioned, information on how to get in touch with Frank and his newsletter, as well as a link to that 14-minute video, $50,000 minimum, by the way, just as a note. And that's going to be over at the show notes at thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Until next time, thanks a lot for listening. Thanks a lot for being there. I appreciate it. Thanks a lot for all your emails. Have a great week. Have a successful week. Have a profitable week. We'll see you real soon. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.